Still say we got to get rid of Gyarg. He does nothing. Nothing at all.
He just sits in the corner. He's quiet. But Greg is here. I mean, Craig is here.
2 weeks in a row, you've called him Greg.
I knew he looks like a Greg that I know.
I don't recognize Craig's buddy over here. Who is that?
That's evil Craig.
Yeah, he's the altered dimension Craig. You know, that has like the mustache and everything. But
oh yeah, darkest time log Craig.
Pretty much. he's supposed to be the intern for Craig, but he doesn't. I've never seen him pick up a pencil.
So. Matter of fact, I've never seen him do anything except stare at us.
So, hi, I'm Grumpy Dungeon Master Christopher, along with Jay, and we have a guest today. Yay!
Yay!
Jack Kruger, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You were actually on my list of people that I wanted to reach out to and ask to, you know, come on our podcast, and I got your name originally because we had made a bunch of podcasts making fun of the D&D nerds thing.
Let me interrupt here. Chris doesn't get happy. Chris doesn't get excited. Chris doesn't show emotion of any sort. But when he found out that D&D and nerds had combined, I don't know if it was anger or ecstasy. It was very difficult to tell.
What did it wind up being?
Well, so initially it came out and like the Nerf, D&D Nerf gun came out at the same time. And we were like, oh, D&D's jumping the shark because they're all teaming up with, you know, other weird products. And I was like, let's just be honest. I love nerds. I love Dungeons and Dragons. This was made just for me. And then, like, I go out and, like, I'm trying to find the nerds packets, and I scour all of North and South Carolina, going to every single store, trying to find nerd packets with the D&D logo so I could buy them and turn them in and get the adventures. And no store had them for, like, the first month.
Yeah. They were really, really hard to come by in the first bit. Like, people were sending in pictures of, like, store shelves completely, like, the display just... Yeah. Empty.
I still haven't seen them.
and then my wife was shopping at Walmart, and she's like, hey, I found them. I was like, how many did you find? I was like, about 15. You only need 7, right? I was like, no, you're buying all 15. And then she goes up to the cash register and just one at a time, like, new transaction, scan one bag, check out, pay with a card, do the next one. And so I got all of them, and they were wonderful, and I read through them, and nice. I loved all the names, and I loved all the artwork. And like I said, it was perfect. It's a very nice thing. We'll get into more details a little bit later. And I was like, okay, so who's the author? And I looked up, and it was you. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. And then I saw like you were interviewed on like for DM's Guild, and I looked a little back, and you know, I did a little bit of research on you, find out like what you did and who you were. And then at the same time, I had to start working on Adventures League. And so I downloaded all the Adventure League modules. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, which one do I want? Oh, this one's perfect. It has Alice in Wonderland on the cover, essentially, with the White Rabbit and the Displacer Beast. And I was like, perfect. I opened it up, read through it. I'm like, oh, this is amazing. This is the one I'll do. And I'm like, okay, who's the author there? So I can ask them to interview. And it was you again. I was like, okay, this has to happen. And here you are.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that I'm here and that you've enjoyed some of my work already. That's great.
Yeah, I'm on your website, the Steampunk Unicorn Studios, which I love the name, by the way. But I was looking at the Stitch in Time, which is the one he was talking about for the Adventures League. And yeah, I love the artwork for that.
Oh my gosh, that was Matt Crook, and they just did such a great job. Like I got to like put together an art brief for the first time in a very long time, and they just did such a perfect job with it. I love the White Rabbit Herengon and the somebody called it a Cheshire Beast.
Nice. Nice. Yeah, it's very reminiscent of sort of the 70s fantasy art that I kind of grew up seeing on all my mom's books and everything. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And when you look inside as well, there's the archway is done in a similar style, sort of looking like the Queen of Hearts from Alice in Wonderland. Yeah, except clockwork.
Yes. Now, when you were writing the Adventure League Stitch in Time one, like, were you given like, hey, we're swapping over to like domains instead of the Feywild now? Like, was that information provided to you? And
yeah, we got just a little bit of information. So the Domains of Delight documentation that went out on DM's Guild, I think it was, I want to say it was a week before or maybe the same day that the Dungeon Crafts came out on DM's Guild. That documentation we got early. So we were able to craft our domains based on the guidelines that were presented to the public later on.
Okay, so you turned that around in just a week.
No, we had it
okay,
about I think it was about a month lead time.
Okay, yeah, because like I said, that had we had actually been discussing the Feywild book a lot.
Yeah, we talked about it a bunch.
The Witchlight one.
Yeah, less about the actual like adventure, because we think the adventure is great. We were very disappointed that the actual book didn't have any lore in it.
Mm.
And you know, it was disappointing to us, more so another grumpy dungeon master named Reverend Panda that's on our podcast sometimes. He was very disappointed that the Feywild lore was in a supplement on DM's Guild. I'm actually writing my own Feywild campaign, so I definitely picked it up because I needed to get that information. I've been using the fourth edition book as the source material,
right? Yeah, that document was really great. I really liked the guidelines that it gave, and it was very specific too on, you know, what you should do for creating your own archfey. It gave some really very specific directions, which I really appreciated.
So the domains are built around the archfey. Is that what it is?
Basically, I think that's the approach that most of us took.
That actually makes sense. Like, I was never a big fan of like the change of turning it towards domains, but at the same time, that's always sort of been, you know, Forgotten Realms in general. Like, all of the domains in Forgotten Realms were built around whatever deity was in control of the area. So if they're just doing the Feywild the same with Archfey, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So what inspired A Stitch in Time? How did you come up with that idea?
So I think pretty much as soon as I knew I was going to be a part of this project, and I think even before then, I was thinking, you know, when they first announced that Wild Beyond the Witchlight was coming out, I was so excited about a Feywild adventure or campaign setting, and I think the wheels started turning back then on, like, wouldn't it be great if Alice in Wonderland, like something Alice in Wonderland inspired happened in this domain? And there was a little bit of hope that Wild Beyond the Witchlight was going to be that. But besides the Jabberwocky stat, I don't think there's too much taken from Alice in Wonderland. So I thought it was a really good opportunity to meld the whimsy and just the disorientation and the time differentials that happen in the Feywild and put it into a D&D setting. Alice in Wonderland is just something that I have loved since I was a kid.
Same.
Yep. Yeah. 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 And, I love it so much that when Arcadia asked me, Matt Colville's magazine, they asked me to pitch, and I actually pitched Monsters of Wonderland, so that's coming out soon too.
Ooh,
you said something that Chris there has been asking about, honestly.
Yeah, there's going to be four fey creatures inspired by Alice in Wonderland.
Nice. There's a lot that I've been writing in with my Owl campaign. I call it the Owl campaign because originally the UA included owls as, you know, a lineage of the Feywild. Mm-hmm. So my wife wanted to play an owl, so I was like, okay, well, nice. I'll write you a campaign. Here you go. And
that's very nice.
So, like, I use, like, the White Knight, for example, was one mm-hmm. of the encounters that I wrote. Kind of had him kind of just kind of old and kind of a little delirious and kind of leading the party around. And there's a couple things I can't mention yet because they're up and coming spoilers, mm-hmm. but we'll talk about it a little bit offline just so I can give you that reference, but there's a lot more, and it's just, I tried to be very subtle with the references that I had, but yeah. pretty much you can just open up through a looking glass and going, oh, they're just going from one to the other here.
Yeah.
So I really enjoy that. I really like, I've always been a big fan of Alice in Wonderland. I never knew why. I just always was, you know. I remember watching
it's really
the Disney
hard
film. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's really hard to put my finger on it too. It's sort of like there's that, I think it's the whimsical element. Like as a kid, like I think you appreciate the chaos of it, but it's also something more than that. It's like a little bit of like defying some of the rules, maybe.
Yeah. Definitely.
Yeah.
Especially if you paint the roses the wrong color.
Yeah, just the whole thing, it's a little weird, it's a little creepy, it's sort of told from a child's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I really
go ahead.
I really do love the white hair being an artificer. I thought that was great.
Seems appropriate. You know, he's fixing stopwatches and everything. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that so one was that was basically the first as I guess the point of inspiration was definitely the White Rabbit and taking the clockwork, the timepiece, and sort of expanding out from there.
Mm-hmm. So in your module at the very, very end, well, it happens during the adventure, but you have a recipe at the very end of it.
Yes.
Is that your recipe or is that something you found and just like threw in?
So we all decided that we were going to put in our dungeon crafts, we were going to put a recipe inspired by our adventure. And I really wasn't sure what I was going to put in mine. Originally, I was thinking maybe it'll be like a good berry tart and, you know, sort of like the Queen of Hearts tarts thing. I wasn't really sure. And then I decided I was going to do this whole weird thing with the werehairs, and I thought about moons, and it happens to be, when I was writing it, it was around the time of Lunar New Year, which is a big Asian celebration in the fall, and one of the things that you eat at that time of year are mooncakes, so it just was like this confluence of like things that happened at the same time. And yeah, the mooncake recipe is just sort of like a combination of different traditional recipes. I wanted the mooncakes I like are, they have like a lotus seed paste in the middle, but I wanted the rabbits to have more of a nutty fruit-based one. So I changed the filling a little bit.
Okay.
Sounds awesome. Delicious.
It's very good.
You Google mooncake and you're just like, oh, I want to eat that.
They're very, very good.
I just listen to you guys talk about it and I want to eat it.
So actually, one of the questions I had for you is, I know the Witchlight book was basically you can go through the entire campaign without a single combat encounter. And yours is built the same way, where you can go through the entire Stitch in Time and not have to do combat. Was that hard to design around? Did you have to do anything special to kind of make that happen?
It was and it wasn't. I mean, it was a challenge that I sort of set up for myself because I did want to be able to get through the whole thing without combat. And ultimately, you actually sort of get penalized at the end if you do go do any combat. So it was difficult in a way because, you know, you're trying to figure out, like, well, what makes it difficult then? And it can't just be puzzles. So I took a look at some of the alternate sort of rules within the Dungeon Master's Guide, taking a look at things like Xanathar's Guide to Everything has some expanded downtime rule about sowing rumors, and that plays a big role in this entire domain because time works differently, so you can sow rumors differently, and they happen faster. So if you misstep in terms of etiquette in this world, which is very big, particularly in this domain, you can sow rumors so that little bit of etiquette is no longer in place. Because time works differently. So one of the examples I put in the book, in the adventure, was, you know, it's the height of rudeness to say any word with the letter H of it in it, especially if it's hello, because it has hell in it. So if you sow a rumor that changes it and, you know, successfully make it so that it's actually the height of good manners to say hello to everyone, and it succeeds, then it changes the outcome at the very end. So it was like, it was playing around with things like that, like time and social norms and other challenges that didn't necessarily require combat. So there's a moment where you have to basically herd number sheep. So I did those as skill challenges, essentially.
Lots of animal handling.
Yeah.
And I found that this really creative too, because like when I was originally like, when I heard that I was just like, okay, everything's just a skill check, and I was glad that there were other ways around things that normally, like, when I've played D&D or when I've DM'd it for people, they can kind of come up with an idea or something like sowing a rumor outside of combat, mm-hmm. and having it actually be a big effect on the world has happened before, but I never thought of that like being like a standard thing to do. So I was very interested, very, very surprised to see that in there.
Yeah, I really feel like this gave me the opportunity to really stretch some of my design skills, because it was, you know, doing things outside of combat and not just putting puzzles and riddles in there. I mean, there certainly are a lot of riddles and other puzzles to solve. You know, the Cheshire Beast, Displacer Beast character goes through the adventure sort of giving these cryptic riddles as hints to solve the problem in a certain area.
Yeah, I'm actually really looking forward to running this. I hope that I actually got to run it tomorrow. So
that's amazing. You'll have to let me know how it goes.
Definitely. I definitely will. Yeah, we're trying to, you know, now that the things are opening back up and my local game store kind of reached out to me. It's like, yeah, we want you to get back to Adventures League. And I've always really liked the idea of running it. And I've run it before many times. And so I got a couple DMs running things, and we all took a random one. And like I said, this is just the one I happened to randomly pick.
Nice.
So tell us a little bit more about you. Like, what is the D20 Dames podcast for people who don't know what that is, and what is Steampunk Unicorn?
Let's see. Let's start with D20 Dames. D20 Dames is an actual play D&D podcast. And it's me along with three other femme, and we play in an actual play. I'm the Dungeon Master. We've been playing podcasting since 2017, and our finale of our first campaign just released today, actually. So that was... Is that 4 years?
That's a long time for a campaign, especially if you're doing it weekly.
It was actually bi-weekly, so
okay, even yeah. Then that's still a lot.
Yeah, there are a lot of episodes, but it's a family-friendly podcast, so our goal was to ensure that, you know, you could sit down with your family and listen to a D&D podcast, because at the time when we first started, there wasn't a lot of that. I don't know if there is a lot of that still.
Probably not. I can definitely say this podcast is not. This is the best. Chris does a pretty good job of keeping it family friendly, but I curse like a sailor.
Yeah, we like when we got together, we originally thought it was going to be a little bit more. I don't know if you've read the Rat Queens.
Familiar with it? Yeah.
Yeah, we thought it was going to be that. So like cursing and harsh, like, you know, really.
Yep.
Yeah. But then we had a conversation about what we wanted to do on iTunes, and did we want to have the explicit little symbol on our podcast? And we said, no, I think we could probably reach more people if we didn't. And then that just completely changed how we played the game, and immediately it became family friendly.
Yeah, I try to keep everything PG-13 for my D&D Twitch stream.
Yeah,
but you know, it just sometimes happens, you know. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, PG-13, you are allowed one F-bomb.
One.
Yep. One. You get one. Not three, Chris. Not three. One.
Yeah, I think we're more in the PG zone because we don't even have that one.
Was that difficult, or is that just normal for you not to like your group to not like swear at all?
I don't.
Or was there heavy adjustment to that?
I don't think it was very difficult for us. I don't think generally there's a lot of cursing.
I think if you're running a podcast or a show or something, and you're actively attempting to, you know, keep it PG, I'm fairly sure most people can handle that, even myself.
Plus our show is even though it's actual play, it is produced. So we have a producer who you know, edits things, so things get cut out all the time.
I'm the editor for this one, so I don't cut out much of anything.
Yeah.
It isn't cut out anything. Yeah. My cat will jump up in my lap and I'll tell it hello and it's still on the podcast. I'm like, come on, Jay.
I mean, I ended up the one I edited 2 days ago, I named it Jay Can't Read Good just because I can't read, apparently. And I, you know, that's something I could have cut out from the whole thing, but nah, I'll just leave it in. Makes it more entertaining.
Yeah.
So how'd you keep that campaign going for so long? Like, unfortunately, I haven't listened to any of them. I'm sorry, but I promise I will.
It's all right.
Like, did you guys like end up like level 20 and like saving the world 1,000 ways over?
No, they wound up at level 9. And let's see. I think a lot of it had to do with like just a lot of collaborative storytelling. So they went the route of not necessarily fighting everything. So I think that's partly where I got all of my experience in non-combat. They were more apt to befriend monsters or problem solve or find them jobs than they were to attack them.
There sounds like there's a story behind that.
There are so many NPCs that have jobs because of them.
My players have hired an ogre before, so it's not out of the realm of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, typically my players, they're going to just kill everything in front of them, but every once in a while they're like, I like this guy, let's hire him. He can do something for us.
That reminds me of like Acquisitions Incorporated, where like they're just running around and going, hey, you want to work for us? Mm-hmm. All right, cool. You're hired.
It was 4 years of collaboration with the other dames. That made it easier to sustain the story, I think, because there was so much input from all of them. They were able to help build elements of the world. It's set in the Forgotten Realms on the Sword Coast, but we were able to build specific locations that were important to them.
I'm holding my tongue, Chris. You mentioned Sword Coast. We constantly joke on here about the fact that that's the only information out there is the Sword Coast. So everything is set in the Sword Coast.
Yeah. One of our characters fell into the Shadowfell for a season, so there was that.
Well, all right. Hanging out with the Raven Queen.
Mm-hmm.
So you said that the series finale happened. What are your plans next for that?
Well, we haven't announced what we're doing next. Okay. It is going to continue being family friendly. Right now, we're basically doing, we're going to have a downtime, sort of post campaign, catching up with how the characters are several months or years after the end. And then we typically also do an end of season campaign, Q&A. So this one is going to be more like an end of campaign Q&A. So we take questions by phone or social media or email, and that information gets posted. It'll be posted on our website soon, I think. And then we'll be doing some, posting some pre-recorded live shows. So we did a lot of convention live shows prior to the pandemic, but lately we've just been doing online shows. And we also have a Twitch channel that we just started up. So we did our first one-shot last week with Jess Ross actually being the DM instead of myself, and Jen Vaughn will be DMing a game on this Sunday. And we're just sort of testing that out for doing one-shots and maybe some video game streaming, crafting, that sort of thing.
Welcome aboard the Twitch stream. We've been doing that for about a year, I think.
Yeah.
And yeah, like Tuesdays we tend to play video games together, and then Chris does some stuff on Fridays and he runs his campaign on Saturdays.
Nice.
Do you want to plug your website, even though it is just d20dames.com? And let's just let everybody know what like the websites are and Twitter.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you can find the D20 Dames website at d20dames.com. Our Twitch stream is twitch.tv/d20dames. Pretty much all of our social links you'll be able to find on our website though, and that's a good spot to keep up with any news and announcements that we might have. We also have a Patreon, which is patreon.com/d20dames, where we have a Discord for our patrons, and we talk a lot about food and crafts, and we occasionally have patron exclusive events like brunches and book clubs and that sort of thing.
Hey, talking about food, it's like what I do for most of my days. I went and I followed you on Twitch, you know, and I saw that you did a Ravenloft one shot. Was that the Strahd Must Die one that they showed on D&D Beyond recently, or is that something different?
No. So Jess Ross is one of the dames, and they wrote one of the domains in Von Richten's Guide to Ravenloft.
Oh.
Yeah, so they ran us through a one shot set in Haslan, and that was a lot of fun. There were some like many eyed watcher cats at one point.
That's not creepy.
I mean, it is Ravenloft. You gotta get to accept the creepiness.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a fair point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was the first one shot that we did on Twitch. That was just this past Sunday. I'm not sure what Jen is running on this Sunday. I haven't.
What time is your stream on Sunday?
10 Pacific.
Okay.
10 a.m. So I should say.
That's 1 in the morning for you, Chris.
No, 10 a.m.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah, we. Yeah, again, we try to do a lot of family-friendly content, we've been trying to pick times where we think it's going to hit the most time zones at a time when families can actually watch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're gamers here in general. I always, like most gamers, I think, are late night people.
Absolutely.
So one a.m., that's, you know, that's like 9 o'clock at night to me.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, mine's every Saturday from like 8 to midnight Eastern time. And that's just because, like, that's all where all my players can meet. You know, that's yeah. what I had to go with.
Always an issue.
Yeah, like I'm thinking about doing like a weekday one, but like, you know, there are definitely some weekdays you just want to avoid, mostly Thursdays.
It's really rough, yeah, doing it during the weekday. Especially having a kid.
Yeah. Well, our daughter goes down pretty well. We've never had an issue putting her down to sleep, so we can put her down a little bit earlier on Saturdays and all start playing at 8.
That's nice.
But during the weekdays, though, we couldn't start till like 9 or 10 if he tried. So it would be a little more difficult. So tell us then, what is Steampunk Unicorn? How'd you come up with such a great name? And
So Steampunk Unicorn Studio is my company. It's where I do my freelance game design work. I came up with the name because prior to becoming a game designer, I was actually a novelist, a young adult novelist, and one of the books I was working on at the time, I gave a code name, Steampunk Unicorn, and for whatever reason, I thought, you know, I really like this name, and I think I'm just gonna, you know, I want to formalize my business. I'd been a freelance writer for about 10 years at that point, and I wanted to become a sole proprietorship. So I registered the name and, yeah, changed careers in the process, I think. Like, I was moving more into the game design space at that point, and just more and more did game design work versus journalistic or writing work.
Hey guys, Chris here, hopping in the middle of the podcast to give you all of our announcements. Be sure to watch our live stream every Saturday at Twitch, twitch.tv/GrumpyDungeonMasters at 8 p.m. Make sure to visit our website, grumpydungeonmasters.com, and order yourself one of our gift packs of Grumpy Dungeon Master dice. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/GrumpyDungeonMasters, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at GrumpyDMs on Twitter. Be sure to check out our new buddies, Fate Awakens, on YouTube at youtube.com/FateAwakens. And also be sure to tune in every Friday at 4 p.m. when they release their new live play D&D session of their homebrew campaign. As always, be sure to check out Zenergy Gamers at zenergy-gamers.com. Use code WordGrumpy for 5% off any online order. Anything else to add, Jay?
Nope. Just over here dancing on TikTok.
All right.
I'm curious, how did you actually get into D&D or tabletop and tabletop in general? Like, everybody has some sort of a story of how they found it.
Yes, mine involves a meet cute. So I've always been more of like a video game player. So D&D to me was like Baldur's Gate video game,
yep,
or Dragonlance books that I devoured as a kid. I never actually played D&D until I was well into my adulthood.
Somebody else with an extreme love for Dragonlance here. So
yes, yeah, I devoured those books.
Yeah,
so
I keep praying that's going to be one of the new campaign settings coming out, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be great. But I was a guest at HalCon Science Fiction Convention in Halifax, Canada, which is where I was living at the time, in 2014. So I was a guest author, and at one of the soirees, my personal assistant that I was assigned also was assigned to Chris Tulock, who was working at Dungeons & Dragons as their program specialist, and had a conversation with him about D&D, and that I'd never played. And coincidentally, he was there because 5e had just come out. Mm-hmm. and he was teaching people how to play. So he set up a game for me the next day. And, you know, he was, because he had all these tutorials going on. And I played in that game, and it was like an hour and a half. And something clicked in my brain that was just like, this is the best game ever invented. I got the starter set right away, DM'd right away a home game, and started teaching. I was teaching at a creative learning center for youth, and started teaching their workshops on creative writing through Dungeons and Dragons. And then I was just like, just Dungeons and Dragons. And then a year later, I was a guest at the same convention again, and Chris came back as well as a guest, and we did a panel together, so he introduced me to Dungeons and Dragons. Eventually, I actually moved out to Seattle because I started seeing him.
Oh, okay. Well, how about that?
Yeah. Haven't really looked back on writing so much. I do have a book coming out that is D&D related that I can't talk about, but that's my latest foray into like writing that isn't game design. I started writing. Actually, I started the podcast in 2017, so that was about a year after I moved here.
Okay. And then you're there in the Shadowrun land.
Yeah. And I published my first D&D adventure, The Trouble at Tressendor Manor, from D20 Dames. Just a few months after starting the podcast, and then just slowly built up my my work from there. I got an opportunity to work on Betrayal at Baldur's Gate as well.
Oh yeah, I've played that plenty of times. I love
the Betrayal game. And then when they a friend asked who was on the team if I wanted to contribute, and yeah, absolutely. I got to contribute a haunt about the Golthias tree, which I'm so happy about.
I don't know if I've played that one specifically, but there's like 50 of them in there, or 100. There's a lot.
There's a lot. I haven't triggered it either. But the times that I've played, it's always one of the dragon ones that gets triggered.
Yeah, I've played the Baldur's Gate one a handful of times. I've played the original one, I don't know, probably 50 times.
Yeah, so good.
Yep.
Yeah, I think we were talking about that last podcast.
Yeah, we were. We were talking about either last podcast or last stream, something.
And like every time I play that game, I've never won. Whether I'm the guy that gets the haunting or I'm on the team trying to beat the haunting,
no.
Never won. Never.
That's right. Yeah, because I was. It started off. I ended up telling the story because we were. It was on the podcast. We were discussing about putting things where they need to be. That way, you know, you can't just sort of walk through everything. And there was the last time I played Baldur's Gate, or not Baldur's Gate, but Betrayal on House on the Hill. We ended up triggering the haunt. Somebody else was the villain, and. Mm-hmm. Everything just happened perfectly where I was in the room with the one item that we needed. So I just picked it up, and the next turn I moved in and killed the bad guy.
Oh my word.
So, you know, this game that could have been much, much longer was over as soon as the haunt triggered.
Yep.
And,
That's wild.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it happens. So.
Yeah. 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 Yeah, after writing Betrayal at Baldur's Gate, I continued writing for D&D, but last year around this time, or maybe a little bit earlier, I was contacted by Hasbro to do some work for them. So I've also worked on, the only thing I think I can say that I've worked on at this point is Hero Quest.
I love Hero Quest.
Yeah, it's very cool. So I got to work on that, the relaunch of that.
I used to play it back in the 90s with some friends of mine, and that was sort of my beginning into miniature gaming.
Yeah, it was really cool. So I had that opportunity, and I've been able to work on some more projects with Hasbro, and then from there I've worked with Ghostfire Gaming, where Sean Merwin is one of the leads now. I had worked with him on a Baldman Games adventure, one of their CCC Moonshay Isles games. And
I also see on your website you have Acerax Collection of Complex Traps.
Yeah, that came out recently. I was just the editor on that one.
Okay.
I don't do a lot of editing work, but a friend of mine, Bianca, she reached out to me looking for an editor. So I did that work on that, which was fun also.
Yeah, we talk about that occasionally, Acerac and such.
Yeah.
I did see like a number of people saying, "Hey, Kat Kruger's the best person ever. Please hire her. She did the editing for this." Aww. I was like, "Aw."
Aw.
But yeah, I participated in the RPG Writers Workshop last year, both times they did it. And I met Cage, and I think everybody's met Cage at this point in time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So she did some, I think, work on that Acerac Trap one.
Yes, she did the layout and graphic design for it.
Oh, okay. Now, here's a weird question. I was a tech writer for past 20 years, still really am. And is all like the layout and graphic work just done through InDesign now, or
pretty much
like whatever anybody wants to use?
I think for quote unquote professional layout, it's typically InDesign. There are less expensive routes that you can go. Affinity is very similar to InDesign. I haven't really played around with it a lot, but it's just a one-time fee to buy the program, and it's very similar to InDesign. So doing your own layout, if you have the inclination to do so and can create a template, it's very helpful. But there's also some great templates that sort of make it look like it was designed in InDesign. And they're available on the DMs Guild.
I've always used Word for everything that I've ever done.
Yeah, there's a very good template for Word right now that makes it look like it was done in InDesign.
I had to grab that for all the fonts.
Yeah.
So like the two things that I published up on DMs Guild, I did everything through Word, and all the technical manuals I've ever written, I've all done through Word. And I've seen people started, I saw Cage mentioning InDesign, and a few other people using it as well. And I'm sitting here, doing the podcast and making videos for YouTube and Twitch and all that stuff. And I'm like, I should probably get InDesign. It seems to be what everybody uses.
It is very expensive because it is a cloud-based subscription monthly fee service, which is why I wouldn't necessarily say that you have to do it. I do think that there are other options that make it look very good. Like I said, if you're starting from scratch anyway, Affinity is probably a good place to start, because I think you can get it on sale for like $20 or $30, and it is pretty much like almost identical to InDesign. Okay. I know that there are a lot of differences as well, but for what you need to output, it's going to create a very nice PDF for you.
Okay. Like, I know a lot of people use Photoshop, and I use Snagit, which is like the $20-$50 equivalent of Photoshop.
Yeah.
So definitely no using the cheaper programs, but I have to like, I've had to learn how to start editing videos as well too. So I want to kind of, if I can sign up for the Adobe Cloud package deal, and I'm using three or four different programs, it may be worth it then. Maybe not
absolutely.
Just for one.
Yeah. Yeah, because it can be really pricey just for one. I think it really depends on like how much you're going to be putting out in terms of content. Because if you're just going to do like one adventure every, you know, few months, it's probably not worth it. But if you're going to do more than that, then or use multiple programs, it's probably more worth it.
Yep. Okay. Yeah. Like I said, thank you for that information. I definitely was like trying to figure out like if I should make that leap or not.
it's so expensive, and I am not a fan of having to subscribe to something every month. And more and more, I'm seeing a lot of people have issues with their program, their InDesign crashing and coming up with like all these errors, and it's kind of scary to, you know, invest that much money and everything's in the cloud and then it's crashing. That's not,
fun. I've done a lot of work for the cloud environment. My actual real job is designing cloud networks.
Yeah.
And I love it in a lot of aspects, but when it comes to just, you know, the software as a service kind of platform, I'm like, I really want it on my computer here at home so I can have it here. I'll upload to the cloud all day long, but I really need to be able to go offline sometimes and just
absolutely work on something. Yeah, absolutely.
Just hopped over to using Incarnate as a map making tool, and that's all through Google Chrome online all the time, and just it goes down so much or has memory problems because it's running through Chrome, and just kind of it's a pain.
Yep.
I still love Incarnate though.
Yeah, it's still the best out there. Yep, for sure. There's so much more I want to ask you about, like your books.
Well, let's talk nerds first. We didn't even ever dive into
the books and nerds. And I also saw that you were part of Eyes Unclouded as well. So I'm going to take a sidestep from nerds, even though I want
to. We'll come back to nerds, but we will get to it. I swear.
My wife absolutely loves Miyazaki, and when I saw the Eyes Unclouded stuff, I was like, this is definitely got to be something that we're going to be doing. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I saw there was a call for submissions, and it was on Twitter, and essentially within, I feel like it was like 30 seconds, I was like, I have an idea for this, I'm going to submit it. Because I feel the same. I love Princess Mononoke in particular is one of my favorites.
My favorite anime by far.
Gosh, it's so good. Yep. And I had an idea right away that I wanted to do essentially a Groundhog Day type of scenario where a city is cursed to relive a moment in time. But the world around this city continues to progress. So I wanted to play with the time element again. And so I submitted this idea about this cursed town that was built over a well, and there was a hunter who tried to kill a boar, and the boar got corrupted. They accepted it. I got to work with some really incredible talent that I've worked with since, and yeah, it was just really exciting to be able to write monster stat blocks for like this corrupted boar, and I had like I can't remember what I called it in the adventure now, but it's like a gargantuan like constellation creature that could turn into a sort of elk.
Yep.
The
giant, the elk spirit, whatever it was.
Yeah, I called it like a forest wanderer or wayfinder or something. But essentially just very much all of it was very inspired by the Princess Mononoke film.
Have to put a cursed magic item out for the demon arm, the cursed arm that he had.
Yeah. There's just so much that you can draw inspiration from so many of those films. But when they put the call out, I knew within moments what I wanted to do for that one.
Wow. Yeah, I've always been a big fan, and like Totoro is just my spirit animal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If I could just retire by sleeping underneath a tree all day, count me in. Yes. I'll do it. All right, so yeah, let's head to the nerds. How did that opportunity to come up for you?
That came up because of my work on Betrayal at Baldur's Gate. And I think because Shelley Mazenoble, she's the one who knew me through that work there. She also, her and Greg Tito interviewed me and Jen Vaughn for D20 Dames really early on in our podcast. And really enjoyed working with each other. And when she had this idea for Nerds on D&D, I think she was looking for somebody specifically who worked in D&D and was family friendly, and she immediately thought of me, which was just fantastic. So yeah, she reached out, and I said yes, of course, because Nerds was like, growing up, that was my candy, right? And playing D&D, I love D&D, and why would I say no?
Yeah, it's what was your favorite flavor, just out of curiosity?
Watermelon.
I would just rip the top off the box guy and just eat the whole thing.
So. Yep. Oh my God. That's me. Yeah, just pour them all in.
So how did that adventure for probably not all people played this one yet, but essentially the adventure is built out as you have an adventure for each colored candy,
mm-hmm.
and then like a big adventure that kind of ties them all in together at the end. What kind of made you kind of set it up that way?
Well, part of it was getting the creative from Nerds and D&D. Some of the information that I got was that each of the characters had their own personality trait that went with it. So, like Pink, for example, is curiosity, and so. You know, in that first adventure, I think they were already assigned their class as well. So that was very helpful. So we have, you know, I already knew that Pink was focused on curiosity and was a rogue. And from there, I was able to just build out whatever adventure I wanted for that character. She gave me a lot of leeway in terms of being creative. And I knew that I knew from the start we were going to do something that wasn't necessarily combat heavy, probably new learner and new DM friendly, very likely young players, and we knew that the first six were going to be meant for one-on-one play, one DM, one player.
Mm-hmm.
So with those parameters. I built out an outline and then sort of went from there and got a lot of great development work with Adam Lee, who works at Wizards of the Coast as well.
I love the names you came up for the villains.
Yeah.
Emo the Beholder, the Hired Muscle.
By the way, Emo's rays are the best thing ever. They're based off of emotions and mm-hmm. things of that nature. It's like when I read his rays and I saw Anxiety Ray, I was like, hey, I've been hit with that. That's me.
Yeah, I figured it would be really fun to play off like the emotions, because if we were gearing it towards kids, like that's something they have to deal with, big feelings all the time, and I think that's what I channeled when I came up with Emo.
Yeah, can I quickly say as well, I absolutely love the maps, the hand-drawn
look. Oh my gosh, yes, they did such a great job with that, didn't they?
Yeah, like it looks like something I would have done, or will. It looks like the maps I still draw by hand.
Yeah, like I said, I really enjoy just kind of like reading through this and, you know, just seeing like all the, like the little tiny like little puzzles and like little things, and like I said, the hand drawn map is like, this is just how you draw it on your dry erase board. Nothing fancy. Mm-hmm. Just here it is. You're done.
Yeah.
Every D&D adventure, because I run in person, and a lot of times I have to just quickly put a map together and sketch it out. Here it is. That's what you get.
Yeah. Yeah, there were a lot of really nice touches that they put into this, including the maps. I just it was just such a great experience to be able to come up with these ideas and then see it like develop into something much bigger than I originally thought it was going to be. Yeah, and it was also really just fun to, you know, to really focus on it being like the marriage of the two. Of the two IP, it was pretty seamless. Like, there's a lot of similarity between the two brands, you know, and the whole adventure together thing was really important. So it's just so much fun. I really enjoyed the work.
Yeah, I mean, one of them is called Nerds, the other one is played by Nerds. You know, mm-hmm. It works out.
Yeah, so I redeemed all the seven that I'm allowed to redeem, and I'm hoping that I win. And
oh, nice.
I did see that there was a guy on Twitter that basically found a way to bind them all together and
yes.
get them together as a book. So I immediately reached out to him. I was like, okay, how do you do this? I'm gonna have to get these bound together. So I have all of his instructions, and I'm working on that as well.
Oh, that's awesome. I loved seeing that. I'm actually really enjoying following the hashtag on Twitter, because like there's somebody who's like rapping songs based on each of the character classes, and
wow.
somebody made like little felt rogue, the pink rogue, just from Feltcraft. It was so cute, because they even had like a tiny little key and a tiny little dagger.
Yeah, I hadn't even thought of doing plushies with these. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
oh man, and you can now I'm thinking of cosplay for conventions.
Oh my word, yes.
That's crazy. Yeah, I didn't see those plushies, but man, I think I'd want those.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what was the most fun part of writing the Nerds? Like, was there any one particular thing that stood out for you in the whole Nerds adventure?
I mean, I really enjoyed writing a lot of the NPCs. I think that's just generally what I really like writing sometimes. So I liked writing the little forest ranger, sapling ranger that they or scout that they meet. One of the nerds meets the ranger nerd meets in the forest. Mm-hmm. I liked that. Actually, I think that might be one of my favorite ones that I wrote. I just, Rangers have a special place in my heart, I think. I just really like playing that class. And I liked being able to have like that puzzle there. I thought it was a cute puzzle with the little emoji symbols.
I think you're the first person I've ever met who said Ranger was their sort of spirit mm-hmm. class. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody has a spirit class of some sort. Like, I play wizards. Chris, he plays fighters. But mm-hmm. I've never met anyone who said they play Rangers.
I really like, actually, okay, Ranger for the longest time was my favorite until I played an Artificer recently. I'm playing an Artificer in the Witchlight game. That I'm in on Sundays, and I think that might be my new favorite. Sorry, Ranger.
You've been dumped.
Ranger's last book. Now I'm Artificer.
But Ranger, yeah, I think I love Ranger because I played basically like a Witcher type character in a Curse of Strahd game with a Ranger. Yeah, and I loved playing that because
yeah, no, that
Monster
that would...
Slayer.
That would be awesome, yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So that's always going to be, I think, one of my favorite D&D characters and actually campaigns. I really love playing through Curse of Strahd. Enough that I'm actually running a Curse of Strahd game now for a home group on Saturdays.
Nice.
Awesome. I saw there was, I mentioned this earlier too, there was the Strahd Must Die, or Strahd Dies Tonight thing that James Hayek wrote. I was like sitting there, I'm like, I really need to run that. Like, I've never run Curse of Strahd. My group kind of wants me to, but I kind of don't. As a DM, I don't want to go through the whole campaign, just gothic horror, and just get gothic horrored out. But for a one night Halloween thing, I definitely could see it. And I think I'm going to try. I have to just convince them to let me try. In regards to Rangers, though, Rangers have always been like, I think players, especially min-max players, kind of look at the Ranger and go, man, the fighter's better. Push glasses up nose. But I tell you what, Rangers have messed up my campaigns more than any other class. Like, the rogue can't just go, hey, yeah, we're not lost, by the way, and I got food for everybody, so yeah, haha, we're not
starving. Rangers were very good in Icewind Dale.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, I can imagine.
We both played through Icewind Dale, we both had parties that had Rangers in it, so it's like, oh, the whole Blizzard mechanic? Okay, yeah, that's irrelevant. All right.
Yep.
Yeah, I had a... I was playing a shadow magic, a shadow sorcerer in Icewind Dale, but we had a ranger in the party. They were more useful than she was.
Yep. As a shadow sorcerer, you get to deal some damage. That's what you do.
Yeah.
So we've been talking for an hour, so I definitely want to get a couple more things out of you, if you don't mind.
Sure.
What is your grumpiest DM story? We ask all of our guests this.
Oh my gosh. I need a moment. You're going to have to edit this pause out because I need to think about it.
Yeah, that's fine. You're not the first person. And honestly, it doesn't even have to be super grumpy. If you just have a story.
I'm just trying to think of... It's not like super grumpy, but it was an earlier experience with the D20 Dames. So I was running Trouble at Tresendor Manor for the Dames, and we're going through... So it's the manor house in... Lost Mines of Phandelver. Nope. Yeah. In this scenario, it's been the manor house is now empty. A previous adventuring party from the Lost Mines adventure had cleared it out. And so the Dames are going through trying to save these gnomes called the Bannock Brothers. They were doing construction, restoring the manor house, and only one of the six brothers escaped and went into town looking for help. And so the Dames go in, they head down into the cellar, and immediately they get locked in. They step on a trap and are locked in. And slowly they're going through it, and they meet one of the brothers, and I don't know what I was thinking, but I was like, I have all, so it's all trapped by kobolds at this point. So I've got this whole network of kobolds. I've got them named. I've got like a locker room with all their names on it. I'm ready for them to ask, you know, about the kobolds. Didn't think about naming any of the other brothers. So they're asking, you know, the first gnome they see, what's your name? And I was like, all right, I wing it. And I think about my friend Dave. So I'm like, Daver. And then the next one, it's like, Traver.
You have just you've accidentally created sort of the seven dwarves. You know?
But then I was like, you know what? I was grumpy about it. So I'm like, I'm gonna get them back for this, and so the first brother's name was Ron Will. I did name him. So then it was John Won't, and the last one was like a red herring. I was like, okay, what am I gonna do for this one? Because it's not gonna rhyme with the last one. So it was Bilnan. It was just a random name that I picked out on a generator, and then so they get to the last brother and they're like, trying to rhyme Billnin or something, right? And then the brother says, "Oh, you want to know my brother's name?" And he says, "It's Rickroll." So, yeah.
He's never gonna give you up. Never gonna let you down.
Yeah, so that was my grumpy moment that I turned around to a very funny moment in the podcast.
it's almost a running gag in my campaign, because my players know by this point, if they're asking the names of NPCs that I don't have, they're going to be named Steve or Dave every single time. Yeah. Like, I don't even get creative with it anymore. It's, this NPC doesn't have a name. It's Steve. It's
I have the same thing too. I tell my players, like, if you ask for an NPC's name and their name is Steve, then you've gone so far off book, I don't know where you are. So one last thing before you go. We've been asking all of our guests to help create, craft, and expand Craig's story. Jay, did you happen to find a list of what Craig currently is?
Yes. So give me a minute. This is a bit, and I don't have every single thing written down, because we've had a number of guests on here who have added to his story.
Okay.
So whenever we actually get around to creating this NPC, he is Craig the Barbarian. So he only plays the flute. Whereas his entire tribe, they only play drums. So he was sort of kicked out of his tribe. Along the way of his travels, he met a pixie fairy named Flicker, who plays the triangle. Let's see. What other stuff? At some point, he ended up with a bag of holding named Ordu that was... It used to be an ogre, so it's like the head of an ogre that got turned into a bag of holding.
Oh, my word.
Let's see. What else? He barbarian rages anytime he sees squirrels because they stole his snacks when he was a kid. And apparently he is also a collector of fine stabby things. Yes, he likes collectible knives.
Okay.
So if you have anything you want to add to his story, it could be a little piece of
lore. Also has a brother.
Oh yeah, he also has an older, smaller brother named Trevor, who beat him up when he was a kid.
Aww.
It can be a stat, it can be any piece of lore, pretty much anything you want to add to him.
He is searching for an enchanted music box.
Ooh, that all right.
That is a mimic.
Oh, this is going to be wonderful.
Why is he?
And I don't think he knows that it's a mimic.
Even better. Ooh. Even better. He's searching for a magical music box that is a mimic and does not know.
That's great.
Yep.
Good luck, Craig.
Good luck, Craig. Hopefully he doesn't end up with the backpack mimic.
Oh gosh.
No, we came across that. I think it was in the Minsk and Boo book. There's a backpack that's a mimic.
Oh no.
Yeah. That's going in my next campaign for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. My players already suspect everything is a mimic anyway, so maybe I'll just make that a thing. Everything is a mimic.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, Kat, it's been wonderful having you on and just chatting with you today. I hope that your next couple things that you have that you're working on that you can't tell us about is works out well. I'm sure it definitely will. And I know you kind of plugged everything earlier, but just go ahead and plug the main things again, if you don't mind.
Sure. Sure. Well, you can find me at Kat Kruger on Twitter. You can also find my company, steampunkunicornstudio.com. That's where I do all my freelance game design work. And D20 Dames can be found at d20dames.com. And all of our social media links and Patreon links are available there. We are starting our new campaign in January of next year. So, but in the meantime, we've got lots of recap episodes, and it's a really good time to jump on and just sort of binge listen to 4 seasons.
Well, thank you again very much for coming on and talking with us.
Thanks so much for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's fun.
I'm glad. Thank you. All right, everyone, say bye to Craig.
Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.
Bye, Craig.
So long. The grumpiness has been your friend. Now go and spread anger through D&D. No, don't do that. Be happy, be friendly, be awesome. But maintain the boiling hate that inside your heart. I don't know, buddy. I'm rambling at this point. Shut me up and end this podcast.